Hello, Cubs fans, and welcome to another episode of the Locked On Cubs podcast, your team every day. This is Sean Sears. I, of course, am not Ryan Davis. I'll be hosting today's show, but I brought on my fellow NBC sports writer, Tony Andracki, to fill in for Ryan today. So, Tony, thanks for being on the show, man. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. We're doing good. Doing good. Ryan, I guess, I think he had something to do with his kids today. So being a dad, I guess, is tough. So he unfortunately couldn't be on the show. But this is episode 134, in case you guys are keeping track, I guess. On today's episode, we'll recap yesterday's big win for the Cubs, their 7-1 win over the Mets. Preview today's matchup with Jacob deGrom and Cole Hamels on the mound in that first segment. Second segment, we'll take it over to Iowa really quick, or I guess Omaha technically, talk about the Chris Bryant and Tyler Chatwood rehabs from last night. And then we'll kind of dive into the offense with Tony, who of course was at the game yesterday and has seen the Cubs play all this weekend. We'll get his take, and then quickly we'll run through the NL Central. So yesterday, I know, Tony, you were at the game. The Cubs ended up winning a 7-4 win. They didn't really take a hold of the game until really towards the end. What was your kind of feeling overall from that game? I know you being there, you probably have a better take than I do on it.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think at first the early take was, you know, oh God, here we go again with John Lester, which, right, you know, I mean, he was probably feeling himself. But then, you know, kind of took over, and it was just really funny. It made Joe Maddon look very clairvoyant, because he was talking before the game about how good of an athlete Lester is and how he does all these things well and he's a good hitter. And then, of course, we see Lester with a huge two-out, two-run hit off Syndergaard. He made that great play on the comeback line drive that luckily was only hit like 72 miles an hour. He joked that if Reyes actually barreled that one up, he would be dead now. And then, I mean, we saw Lester even pick a guy off and throw another pickoff throw that nearly got a player as well. So it's kind of like has this other weapon in his arsenal now all of a sudden for the stretch run. But, you know, either way, I think it was John Lester kind of stole the show at first, but then it was more a matter of, man, this offense really is feeling it right now. And that is a huge thing moving into the final month.
Definitely. For those who weren't able to catch the game, John Lester won 6 innings, gave up 9 hits, but scattered them across those 6 innings, only allowed 4 runs, had 3 walks, but ended up with 6 strikeouts. Pitched pretty well, honestly. Actually, you know what? I think I just read Syndergaard's line. Excuse me. John Lester won 6 innings with 5 hits, 3 runs, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts, gave up that one home run. Honestly, look like a pretty solid John Lester start, you know, kind of settled in, like you said. But the big thing, like you talked about, is this Cubs offense. We've seen it now in 6 straight games. They've looked like a really solid, complete offense after, you know, almost a month or so of baseball, where it's just like brutal to watch this Cubs offense go through. What is the big turnaround right now, Tony? Is it anyone in particular? I know Rizzo just won player of the week. He had 3 home runs. He had a home run yesterday. He's got 4 home runs in his last like 10 games. He's on fire. Is he the big difference, or is it just like everyone across the board right now?
I think it's everyone across the board. I mean, Maddon was also running it down before the game, and it kind of rang true. And I mean, obviously Rizzo's doing well, and Javi has kind of come back to the surface, to the MVP race after a struggle there for, you know, about a week or so. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, up and down the lineup, Kyle Schwarber suddenly has found his power stroke. Obviously, Daniel Murphy, everybody's been pointing to that. What he does in the lineup, atop the lineup, has really changed everything for these guys, because now, you know, Lester made a joke that the Cubs have never been able to get him out. So it's nice to see the rest of the league can't either. But, I mean, this guy, he's hit safely and scored a run in every single game so far atop the Cubs order. And he really just makes everything else go. I mean, he's had multiple hits, I think, in 5 of the 6 games as well. So it's just changed so much for this lineup. And then it kind of permeates down. Like, Wilson Contreras actually has been looking a little bit better, even if the results aren't there yet. And then, I mean, Zobrist is just been doing what he does all year. And right, after an ankle injury, Hayward kind of looks like he's back as well. So it's everybody kind of all going well individually. But I think Rizzo said it best. This offense is a feel offense. It's contagious, both good and bad. So when things are going well and everybody is having good at-bats, it's contagious to the rest of the lineup. But when things are not going well and having bad at-bats, it's kind of contagious through the rest of the lineup as well. So they're right, just on an upswing right now, and hoping that lasts, obviously, you know, for a while now.
Definitely. For the Cubs scoring here, of course, they knocked in a run with the Mets at the first inning. The Mets tacked on two runs on John Lester. I think Ahmed Rosario snuck in a single, and then Michael Conforto smashed that ball into center field, like 471 feet. The Cubs came back in the third inning, scored three runs to take a 4-3 lead. The Mets took another run in the seventh inning, but the Cubs came back and scored two runs on, I think it was a Zobrist double, and then I think someone scored on a pass ball. I think that might have been in the third inning, actually. And then the Cubs were able to tack on another run in the eighth to give themselves a 7-4 lead and ended up winning that game. So Steve Cishek, I always want to call him Chizik. Cishek picks up the win yesterday. And then Jesse Chavez came down for the save for tomorrow, or I guess today, technically. Not technically, it is today. Cole Hamels and Jacob deGrom going up against each other. This is a good matchup. Of course, we've seen Cole Hamels on the season. He's got a 3.82 ERA, but with the Cubs, I think it's 0.79 in five starts with Chicago so far. And deGrom, of course, his ERA is at 1.71. This is going to be a title match pitch up matchup right now. I'm excited to see it. What's your thoughts on this matchup so far, Tony?
Yeah, you know, I think it's just the Cole Hamels aspect of it. Obviously, right. deGrom is fantastic and just been, you know, I mean, he's the NL Cy Young right now for sure. So we need to see how the Cubs offense responds to that. But, you know, I think the Hamels thing is a big question in my mind. And I imagine in most people, the mind of most people watching the Cubs right now, he's not going to have an ERA under 0.8 all the time.
Right.
that he's made. And I know that you just wrote about it for NBC Sports Chicago too. It's these mechanical changes really seem to be a huge factor right now. And we know what this guy is capable of. We've seen what he can do in the past. So it would be awesome to see him continue to go forward with it. And the last time we saw him face an NL Cy Young candidate was Max Scherzer. And the two turned in one of the most exciting games in baseball before David Bodie hit the ultimate grand slam. So in that kind of sense, I'm just excited in general as a baseball fan, because it should be awesome.
Yeah, you kind of touched on it there a second ago. Like you said, I wrote that article about Hamels and his adjustments he's made mechanically. He was on 670 The Score. They were at Brickhouse, actually, for an hour with the Score guys, with Bernstein and McKnight. And he talked a little bit about how he was landing open front side, and he felt like he wasn't able to hide the ball as well. And because of that, he just wasn't comfortable on the mound. He was working through an oblique tear, I think, from last year or 2 years ago. But he clearly made those adjustments, but he said it just kind of all clicked when he came to Chicago. It wasn't necessarily anything he was doing much different. It just felt like it was a combination of him finally identifying what the issue was and then, you know, coming into a postseason race and being kind of rejuvenated in a sense. So it's great that it's working out for the Cubs. But yeah, like you said, it's still, I mean, it's only been five starts. As great as those five starts it's been, it's tough to put a ton of stock into Hamels quite yet. He's been great, and I don't necessarily think we need to expect like a complete inverse, but we'll probably see him regress to the mean a little bit. The Mets were extremely hot coming into this game. I think they'd won like their last five series were like 12-6 over their last like 18 games or something like that. They came in and scored four runs against the Cubs. Is this a team? I mean, I know with DeGrom up today, it's going to be difficult. But is this a team that like, the Cubs should be worried about, or is this a team that like we should be expecting a sweep? Like, what's your feel with the Mets after seeing them yesterday?
You know, I think it really matters most about whether the Cubs execute or not. It's kind of a cliche, but I think with the Cubs, as much as any team in baseball, because of their youth and what we've also seen them accomplish the last few years, I think it rings more true that they just have to worry about themselves. And if they execute and play their game, then they should be fine regardless of opponent. And that is true. I mean, even without guys like Darvish or Bryant or Brandon Morrow or even Mike Montgomery, this roster is still so incredibly talented that they should be able to handle it. And yeah, I mean, the Mets have been playing well, but they also just got completely walloped on Sunday. Gave up 14 runs or whatever. So I mean, they kind of came in not feeling great about themselves, even if they actually had a decent record the last few weeks. But yeah, you know, I think it's kind of a punch to the gut for a team like the Mets, who have had a really tough year, when they have Syndergaard on the mound and they've got to Lester early and build this lead, and then all of a sudden it evaporates. So, you know, even though they have DeGrom going, obviously they have to go up against Hamels. And they have to execute as well. And really, this lineup just is not very good, the Mets lineup. I know they scored four runs, but, you go through and look at, and batting average doesn't matter, but they got like two guys hitting 270 and then everybody else is hitting like in the 230s. Yesterday, you know, they had, I think two guys under 200 and two guys barely over 200 in terms of batting average. So they don't slug the ball much. They don't take a lot of walks. This isn't a great lineup. And when you have a lefty out there as well, it kind of neutralizes some of the best hitters the Mets have right now in Brandon Nimmo coming back from a hand injury. And then Michael Conforto. I mean, Conforto hit a ball almost as far as Javi did, you know, in game one. But really, he's not as effective against lefties. So, you know, mm-hmm. Hamels going again kind of helps neutralize the best parts of this Mets offense.
Yeah, that's kind of what we were talking about yesterday. Ryan and I were saying how, like, it's two really good pitchers, and if the Mets were even just a little bit better, it might be more of a litmus test to show how good maybe the Cubs are. But honestly, I mean, with the way the Mets are, even coming as a hot team, it's not necessarily a real test to the Cubs outside of maybe how they do well, how they do faring against maybe guys like Syndergaard and DeGrom, but that's about it. So, but we can go to the next segment here where we'll talk about Chris Bryant and Tyler Chatwood's somewhat interesting debuts with Triple A Iowa, and then we'll dive into the offense a little bit further. So yesterday, like I was saying before here, Chris Bryant and Tyler Chatwood had their first action with Triple A Iowa yesterday night. The iCubs lost 7-6. Chris Bryant had an okay debut. He was 0-for-3 with a walk. He reached on base with an error, scored twice. Did have a strikeout, but was taking good swings. He had one hit. The error was like a liner right to left fielder. And I don't know if he just like misplayed it or dropped it or whatever it was, but it went right to left fielder and was dropped. But Chris Bryant crushed it. And then his first at bat, I think he hit a ball that almost left the yard straight to center field. If he pulled it or, you know, was waited a little bit, sent it to right field, it was probably a home run. So encouraging debut for Chris Bryant with AAA. Unfortunately, Tyler Chatwood, not so great. He got pulled after 4 3 innings. I think he walked 5, struck out 3. He threw 77 pitches. Out of those 77, I think only 33 were strikes. So terrible percentage there. But it's crazy because the first inning he went 1-2-3. In the third inning, he kind of pulled it together quickly. But the second inning, he just couldn't locate. Tony, your quick take here on these two guys and their debuts here with Iowa.
Yeah, you know, I think with Bryant, his left hand was still coming off the swing a bit, which was not concerning at all, because it's something the Cubs and both Bryant and Joe Maddon said was probably going to happen. But I think the most interesting thing was that he just kind of looked like Chris Bryant again. You know, it was interesting to see him out there. It's been over a month, and even with a new swing, obviously we're still effective. And even though he didn't have a hit, that's kind of Chris Bryant's MO, is he helps the team, you know, win games, or he ends up making an impact somehow, even if he doesn't get a hit. So, I mean, he drew a walk, he scored 2 runs. And so I think it's, if he responds well, and it was also just good to see, you know, him catching up to actual live pitching in games with that new kind of swing as well. So that was definitely a positive, a step in the right direction, and he should be playing the field his next time out as well. And, I mean, there's no guarantee that he really needs more than 2 games. He probably won't join the club until Thursday or Friday at the earliest, but if all goes well and he's not that sore, it'll be sooner rather than later. And then, the Chatwood aspect, just not sure what the Cubs do with him at this point when – right. Walk that many guys, even in the minor leagues in a rehab outing. It just points to the fact that Chatwood obviously has some issues still with his mechanics and throwing and just command in general, throwing strikes. So if he can't do that, I don't see how he comes back before September 1st, before rosters expand. And even when he does come back, like, how does he pitch in any sort of innings that matter at this moment? He probably is a guy that may get a start or two if the Cubs clinch things early. Otherwise, he might just be kind of a mop-up long man in the bullpen. I'm not sure what other role he could possibly have.
Yeah, I mean, it's just tough to have any real confidence in him. And it's interesting because the Cubs seem to really keep giving him more and more chances. Just I don't know if it's like because they feel like they're financially in debt to him. They did give him a decent amount of money these last couple of years. But yeah, maybe it's because they really like the guy. I mean, he does have a solid work ethic. You have to say something about a guy that can go out there and just get beat the crap out of and still go out there and try and do it again. So, I mean, kudos to the guy. But, yeah, it, clearly the results haven't been any different pretty much through the whole year. So, yeah, I think long reliever is probably what you can maybe put Chatwood in, and that's about it, honestly. So, beyond that, though, it's interesting. I mean, Chris Bryant, like you said, still productive even without a hit. He's going to play again tonight in Des Moines. I think after that, I don't know if he's guaranteed any more games. I know the Iowa Cubs general manager was, like, trying to get as many people to buy tickets for Tuesday as possible because they don't know if Chris Bryant's going to be back after that. So he's got at least one more game with Iowa. But, yeah, I mean, if he has another productive game, I think it'd be tough to not pull him up to the roster. And when we do that, I mean, we've talked about it a million times, but what do you think happens with, you know, Chris, if Chris Bryant's ready to come up, do you send David Bote down for, like, 4 days and kick him back up? Or, like, what's the move there? What do you think the Cubs would go with?
That's a really good question. And I think a reporter asked, you know, kind of jokingly over the weekend to Joe Maddon, if Chris Bryant's ready before rosters expand, will you guys have room for him? And Maddon smiled and was like, yeah, I think we'll be able to make room. And, you know, I mean, that's really what it comes down to. I mean, this is the former MVP a couple of years ago. Like, Cubs will figure it out. It probably might be something like David Bote going down. But you know what? It also could be an Alec Mills type situation where I don't expect Bryant back even by Wednesday. That just seems too early to rush him. Plus, it's already a tough travel schedule because he was in Omaha, Nebraska, and then has to go back to Iowa for Tuesday. And then if he had to come back to Chicago Wednesday for a day game, that would be difficult. And either way, as is, you know, going from Iowa to if he meets up with the team in Atlanta for just one game, then has to go to Philly. Like, no matter what, Chris Bryant has a brutal travel schedule this week. I don't think the Cubs make that worse by forcing him, you know, to play a day game after a night game Wednesday after Iowa's game. So I don't see that happening, which means Mills is starting Wednesday. So the Cubs could option him down since they won't need him after Wednesday, activate Chris Bryant, and then keep Bote on the roster, and then rosters expand on Saturday. So if they want Mills to take another turn through the rotation after Wednesday, he'll be in place by then. Or, you know, he also would be up to help, you know, kind of augment the bullpen as well. So I think that's the best option. But yeah, if there's some sort of wrinkle that goes into that, then yeah, Bote, unfortunately, is probably the guy that gets sent down for a couple of days.
Yeah, that's the move that makes most sense to me. I think trying to, I mean, if you can keep David Bote on the roster, clearly the Cubs aren't trying to send him down. But yeah, if it's Chris Bryant or David Bote, clearly we know who the Cubs are going to go with. But taking a look, I know you wrote a story earlier this week about what potentially this Cubs postseason roster could look like. It's kind of interesting now because the Cubs, once Chris Bryant gets back, they have a lot of options in the middle infield. When you talk about guys that maybe haven't played there as much but could play there, you've got guys like Russell and Baez who've been mainstays in the middle of the infield for a while now. Chris Bryant coming back, David Bote's in the picture somewhere. Daniel Murphy's a player that it's going to be tough to pull him out. How do you see the Cubs balancing this? Is it just going to kind of be like, you know, who's got the hot hand? I know Joe Maddon talked about how he doesn't like putting together lineups like that. How do you see this postseason roster coming together for the Cubs?
It's a good question. And it's kind of, I feel like every week things change, and that's what, you know, every Monday I'm going to roll out like another edition of what the postseason roster kind of an update and what the lineup might look like, because everything around the Cubs is changing as well. I mean, as of this Monday, they were probably set to play the winner. Well, they were set to play the winner of the Cardinals or Brewers in the wild card game. So I gave it to the Cardinals since they had home field advantage. So all of that really changes, and it'll just be a matter of matchups. I mean, they like Almora still against some righties. They like Bote against some righties, but both of those guys play against lefties a ton. But then you throw Chris Bryant in the factor and everything else. So it's, you know, I think Daniel Murphy right now has proven he will be the leadoff hitter for the team regardless. I think Ben Zobrist has absolutely proven that he's healthy. And even if he's 37, he will be in every Cubs postseason lineup, assuming he's healthy this year. It doesn't matter where he plays. He will be there, probably be one of the top four or five hitters. And then, yeah, you got, you know, the Bryant, the Hayward, Javi, Rizzo. All of a sudden, things are starting to look a little bit deep here with Murphy in the fold. But I think it's just, you know, the questions basically come down to the Schwarber, Almora aspect of it. right now, I think it'll be much like it was last postseason in that Ian Happ might not draw any starts. I mean, I don't think he had a start at all in the Cubs' 10 postseason games last year. Mm-hmm. So I think that'll be one of the most interesting factors. But then I think it's also the David Bodie, Tommy La Stella kind of argument. Right now, there would only be room for one of those guys, assuming Addison Russell's healthy. If Russell's not healthy, then you do different things. But I don't see how La Stella's on the playoff roster at the moment. With as good as he is as a pinch hitter and how dynamic he's been as a left-handed bat off the bench, he has a slugging percentage approaching around 300 now for the season. So it's just difficult to try to say that he deserves a roster spot over Bodie, who can play any infield position very well. He can be a pinch runner, and he just has that special something that so far this season. And I feel like the Cubs would be kind of silly not to ride that magic hand going into October.
Yeah, you're right. La Stella's slugging percentage on the year is 313 right now, which is great. Because it's above 200 now, finally. But in terms of what real slugging percentage should be, it's not very good. I think he's only got a couple. I think it's like a handful of doubles are his only extra base hits. He hasn't had anything further. Hasn't hit a home run this year, I don't think. You kind of think like if you have to go between Bodie or La Stella, like you take Bodie just because like all the things you mentioned. But you also have Daniel Murphy, who, if he's not starting, is a much better option as a pinch hitter from the left side than Tommy La Stella would be. And then you think like if Daniel Murphy's in the lineup, who's not, probably some type of combination of Schwarber, Zobrist, Hayward, someone like that. There's options there. Victor Curantini, I guess, if you really wanted to go out there and get a switch hitter. But there's better options, I think, right now. And as great as La Stella is in the pinch hitting moments, all the other optics kind of point to keeping a guy like Bodie as opposed to Lestelle at this point. So,
yeah, I'd agree. And you brought up a good point too. I mean, if Schwarber is not playing for a game, is not starting, then that's another left-handed bat off the bench as well. And if we're already talking about Happ and Caratini, possibly if, Almora starts, say, instead of Schwarber, or Zobra starts in left instead of Schwarber, that's another left-handed bat as well. So it kind of neutralizes the main thing that Lestelle is even out here for.
Exactly. Yeah, you just have better guys and better options at that point. So I quickly, before we jump to the last segment here, this Cubs offense, Daniel Murphy, as we talked about at the top of this lineup, has really kind of changed the way this Cubs offense has been going. They've got a tough schedule coming up here these next couple of weeks where they face – I know they start with they've got Philadelphia coming this weekend, so we'll see Jake Arrieta. And then they've got three games of Milwaukee. I think they've got a four-game set with Washington. And then I think they play the White Sox or something like that later on, which, nothing crazy, but they always seem to split those series, which is weird. But they've got some tough games coming up here. This is the moment that, the Cubs are kind of needing to really take these and either split them or win these series. Is like, is this offense, do you think this offense is the offense we're going to see against those teams? Or are we just kind of seeing an offense that's beating up on some bad teams at the moment?
Well, I think beating up on bad teams certainly helped and is fair, but the thing is the stats all count, the W's all count, and all the Cubs really needed was to get that feeling back. Cause like we were talking about earlier, they're such a feel offense and lineup. So all they really needed was that. And I think just that can obviously permeate. We've seen that from the Cubs this year and in the past where it can last for a while with this offense. But I think the Daniel Murphy aspect was a huge shot in the arm, to use a phrase that Rizzo said and Lester has used as well about Murphy. And then the fact that Chris Bryant's coming back too. And then, if you get Addison Russell back in another week or two and you get this kind of dynamic pinch runner in Terrence Gore coming Saturday. And
that's right. I forgot Terrence Gore.
Right. Yeah. So these different aspects of this Cubs offense can stick around for a little while. So, I definitely think it could play, but also, they're in the midst of playing 23 games in 23 days. So even if they're feeling good right now and they're off to a good start in that stretch, it can kind of go away in a hurry, and they're playing a lot of good pitching. It's DeGrom, and then, Jason Vargas doesn't have great numbers, but Madden's been talking him up, and then you got the Phillies, and you're facing the Braves ace, and you're facing the Brewers twice before they get the next off day, and you're facing the Nationals and likely to see Scherzer and Strasburg in Washington with that four-game series. So it's all of that different aspects. We could be in a totally different spot with this offense a week or two from now.
That's true. It's pretty much just riding the waves at this point. And that's like, honestly, it's the perfect way to describe it, saying they're just a feel offense. Cause really, I mean, like we saw it even like 2015 and 16 with Dexter Fowler, like he'd just have a game where, you know, maybe he didn't get a hit or maybe he got walked in the first inning, but he would have like a 7-pitch first inning at bat to lead the game off. And the Cubs, you know, were able to see 7 pitches and in a bat, and, you know, Chris Bryant's up to bat now and he hits a double and the Cubs are already leading 1-0 and, you know, the pitcher's thrown 8 pitches already. So they're great at that. And it just seems like since Fowler's left, they haven't really had maybe that presence there or whatnot. Daniel Murphy's kind of giving it to them. I wouldn't necessarily say that's the reason why, but it just seems like it just takes like one guy to kind of set the tone and hopefully they follow suit. And it was so weird because this entire season, we didn't see that. We saw like spurts of Chris Bryant hitting like 4 home runs in 5 games, you know, Kyle Schwarber having a super hot May, Anthony Rizzo's now picking it up, but, you know, Jason Hayward, a really hot July. It just seemed like guys were having spurts, but no one was collectively hitting. So it's just nice to see over the last week, the Cubs pull together.
Yeah, definitely. And that, you know, goes back to the feel like Rizzo said. So, but imagine the mental boost. We already saw it with Murphy, and now you get the 2006 MVP back, even if he doesn't play every day to make sure he's healthy. That's just an insanely good mental boost for this roster.
Definitely, definitely. All right, let's take a we'll slide over to the third segment. We'll take a look at the NL Central standings, and I'll wrap up the show here. So standings yesterday, pretty easy. No one in the NL Central played besides the Cubs yesterday. So the Cubs ended up sneaking, I believe, a half game on both the Cardinals and Brewers now. So the Cubs sit at 77-53. They are 4.5 ahead of the Cardinals right now, who are at 73-58. The Brewers sitting in third place right now, a half game behind St. Louis. They are 5 games out at 73-59. Pittsburgh at 64-67, they're 13.5 out. And Cincinnati's at 56-75, 21.5 games out. Ryan and I kind of talk about this almost every episode now because it seems like the Cardinals for the last couple weeks don't know how to lose. Are you concerned about the Cardinals at this point, Tony? Are you still kind of like both the Brewers and the Cardinals are teams that you're worried about? But, you know, like what's your feel, I guess, right now with both these teams who are still – I mean, the Cubs are putting distance here, but it's not totally like – you know, the Cubs have this division yet by far.
Right. Yeah. I think the Cardinals are the scarier team because they're hot and we've seen it from so many teams in baseball in the past. I mean, I know it was over a decade ago now, but remember that Rockies team that won like 21 of 22 games or whatever to get into the wild card and go from there. It's just, it's really about who is hot at the right time. As long as you're able to kind of float around the division or wild card spot, it's just about getting hot at the right time. And obviously we know right now the Cubs are hot, but also right now the Cardinals are as well. And it's weird to see that from a team that fired their manager midseason, which is so not a Cardinals move. They never do stuff like that. And then, you know, they trade away a guy in Tommy Pham, who was their number three hitter for most of the last 2 seasons. And then Carlos Martinez, their ace, has not pitched much because of shoulder issues and is now back in the bullpen. And their starting rotation is filled with, you know, these guys that were unknowns prior to this year and, you know, Mikolas and Jack Flaherty and Luke Weaver and stuff. So it's interesting to see how it's gone. But, you know, I think they're the scarier team at the moment. And really it comes down to the fact that I cannot believe the Brewers have still not added pitching. I just don't understand it. I thought they needed to add pitching over the winter because that was their main area of weakness. And they added Yelich and Kane, which has been fantastic for them, but they still need more pitching. They never did it. At the trade deadline, they thought they were going to add more pitching. They didn't. Ended up losing Brent Suter as well from their rotation. And then I thought they were going to possibly get a guy like Harvey on waivers, and somehow that fell through as well. So I just don't understand. I mean, this is the time when you need depth in pitching, and the Brewers have not added it. And if they don't make the playoffs in any capacity, which right now it looks like it may not, I think it'll be because of the lack of pitching. So with that being said, I think the Cardinals are scarier to the Cubs.
Yeah, that's my exact thought process. Is just, I mean, when it comes down to pitching, that's what usually wins your postseason games. St. Louis has it, and the Brewers definitely don't, unfortunately. They've got some good arms, but, you know, what they have currently. They just needed another guy. Even just like Matt Harvey gives you a guy that can give you six innings, you know, and he has some stuff that can make him miss bats. I thought Chris Archer was a guy they would really heavily pursue, but maybe the asking price was just too much for what Pittsburgh had to give up for him. It seems like a lot. And he hasn't been necessarily great. I know you had a tweet yesterday talking about how you were waiting for Chris Archer to become that ace we're all talking about at age 30. It still hasn't happened. So,
right. Yeah.
It's weird because this Milwaukee team is good. They are good. They've been around with the Cubs pretty much this whole season now. They haven't been able to take that step. And now it's looking more and more like the Cubs were just kind of struggling more so than it looks like the Brewers were really crushing. They had hot streaks and whatnot, but this doesn't look like a legitimate postseason team at this point. So taking a look at the wildcard standings, of course, Cubs, Atlanta, Arizona, all right now would be in the playoffs because they're leading their division. Milwaukee and St. Louis right now would be the two wildcard teams. Colorado's a game out, I believe, or a game and a half out. Philly's 2.5 games out. Dodgers are 2.5 games out. And then Washington, San Francisco, and Pirates are all 7, 7.5, and 8.5 games out. So realistically, probably not in the picture at this point. So that wildcard spot going to be tough to get to, though. But beyond that, Tony, any other Cub shout outs you wanted to send out here before we wrap up the show?
No, I mean, I think getting Bryant back will just be so interesting. And I can't believe how well the team really has done without basically their best player performing at the level that we know he's capable of since like late May. And they're without Morrow as the closer and obviously without Darvish. And, you know, I think this has been one of the biggest struggles the Cubs have had in a season, obviously over the last few years. And last year they had the hangover, but other than that, and Schwarber's big injury in 16, but this year has just been so many other little things that have turned into big things. And the fact they're where they are now and they have a sizable lead on the Cardinals and Brewers in the division going into September, I think this is some of Joe Maddon's best work yet. I think it's some of Theo Epstein and his front office, their best work yet. And then, I mean, the guys that they keep bringing, like we didn't even talk about Jesse Chavez and how he just picked up the save Monday night and has been this incredible under the radar pickup that the Cubs gave up nothing for. And they give up nothing for Cole Hamels and nothing for Daniel Murphy. And so it's just been, there's so many good reasons to point to that are good right now with the Cubs. And I guess, you know, we'll see over the next 2.5 weeks before they get an off day, if they can maintain that.
Yeah, that's a great point. He's Tony Andracki. You can follow him on Twitter at TonyAndracki23. Of course, we're both writers at NBC Sports. You can follow me at Sean R. Sears. Follow Locked On Cubs at Locked On Cubs on Twitter. Leave a review. Give us a rating. Do all the fun things you can do on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud. I think we're on Spotify. So anywhere you listen to a podcast, leave us a review. Leave us a rating. It'd be greatly appreciated. Tony, it's awesome you were able to come on the show today, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate you having me.